I just wanted to ask you to start off something we had been talking about back in Cullum, and that's the legislation that you were working on concerning the property tax and education funding. And I just wanted to make sure I understood the basic points of that, which, if I remember correctly, was to essentially give property owners a discount up to $150,000 of their assessment. Is that how it works?
It would be single family homeowners that live in their homes. Otherwise, if you're renting your house, it wouldn't qualify. You'd have to be owner occupied single family home. And I think another way that you sell this, and I think it'd be the coalitions would be strange. And when you look at education funding, it depends on where you live in the state as to how much money you have to spend on education. You live in a property tax wealthy area. The schools have indoor swimming pools and tracks, and you come downstate to some of our districts or in the city of Chicago, and they have very little property tax money, and therefore the schools are wanting for a lot of classrooms and supplies and things. And I think if you get away from property tax as a way to fund schools, you'd fund it more equitably statewide.
Okay. So this would be a break for the school district property tax only for the first $150,000 value of an owner-occupied home, and the money that had been going to school districts from that property tax revenue would it come from a particular state fund? Where would lawmakers go to put that in?
Well, we'd have to look at the income tax and sales tax and decide how we wanted to apportion it. Maybe when we get the numbers in as far as the amount of money we're talking, maybe we'll decide that $150,000 is too much. That's just a point that I started at. There's nothing in concrete. It's fluid. I'm willing to look at different funding levels. I think it's just a starting point, and we'll look and see what develops.
Do you have an idea of when you might introduce this as formally file this as a bill?
Well, I'm going to try to do it. I think the deadline for getting bills written up is February 15th, I think, for getting them filed. So I'm going to try to get it done before then. If not, we'll have to wait till next year.
Okay. But this for you, this seems to be an idea for the long haul. You want to get that thing out in the public debate.
Yeah, I think it's been in the public debate the idea for a long time. This is a little different twist, and we'll see what happens.
Okay, thinking of a couple of the committees that you mentioned when you spoke in Cullum, one of them I think was one devoted to rural economic development. Tell me about that committee.
You know, that was a new committee this year. And basically, several years ago, House Republicans formed a committee, and we went around the whole state holding hearings, trying to develop a plan to try to help smaller communities and areas. And we came up with some proposals. The problem is that we're the minority, and really the plan that came about, really nothing happened. So I was very encouraged when Speaker Madigan developed and started this committee, and I'm hoping maybe some of the ideas that we came up with in the past, I'm willing to look at any idea. Rural areas need help. I think in the Sunday News Gazette, if you looked at, they had an article about Rossville and Danville and Hoopstons, of the buildings downtown that are in poor state of repair, and they need to do something about them. And that's common in every small rural town. We need help with infrastructure. There's just so many needs that aren't being met.
Okay. Is the committee up and running? How long?
The committee's up and running. We haven't really done a lot this first year, but hopefully we can get running full speed this year.
You are, I think, what the Republicans, what's the time?
Republican spokesman for that committee.
And who's the chairman?
Right.
I'll have to look it up.
Well, I'll have to look it up, too. I can see his face. I can't think of his name.
Okay. Having that committee up there, is there some common ground between the two parties on things that might get done?
I think there's a lot of common ground. It's whether whether Speaker Madigan is going to let any of the ideas that we come up with go forward.
Mm-hmm. What sort of ideas would you like to advance through that committee?
Well, the first of all, being in a rural area, you've got to have a state that is economically viable for business to want to come into. Illinois, I think, right now is not considered business friendly. When you have a governor that proposes a gross receipts tax, that just scares any business away that's thinking about investing in Illinois. I mean, when you're going to be investing millions of dollars in a state, you don't want to have wild ideas floating around as to something like that. It scares investors away, and so we need to develop a plan for the whole state, and to make Illinois business friendly, and only then really can we concentrate on helping the rural areas, because it's a lot bigger picture than just what we can do in our small rural communities.
I think back to a couple of years ago and the campaign to try to get the Honda plant, which is now opening in Indiana, over here. And I don't know, was the site in your district or was that?
No, that was in Bill Black's different district.
But do you see that situation as an illustration or part of the problem the state faces right now?
I don't think there's any doubt about it. Over the last several years, there's been, I think there was a very large distribution center that was thinking about going to Danville. They looked at the state of Illinois, and they chose to stay in Illinois. I know just recently in my area, we've had several ethanol plants, proposed. And when they looked at what it was going to cost to build their plant in Illinois versus somewhere else, none of the ethanol plants were built. We have a requirement of project labor agreement. I think one venture capitalist company came in, and I talked with them about the site in Gilman, and they said that it would cost them $18 million more to build the plant in Illinois versus 30 miles away in Indiana. And you're talking about $180 million investment, so it's probably 10% higher to build in Illinois.
And again, tell me the name of that thing you just mentioned that added on the extra expense.
Project labor agreement. That's where before you even start to build, you decide what companies are going to get what part of the project, rather than you being able to hire whoever you wanted to. Putting out local bids, you're going to have all that decided before you come in and start to build.
Okay, and it's not based on the lowest bidder, or
no, it's not.
What sort of thing is it based on?
Well, it's based on probably who has political pull it's not business friendly. I'll tell you that.
Is that sort of proposal changing or doing away with the required project labor agreements that you would like to see your committee take up?
Well, that's just in the ethanol plants. I mean, there's project labor agreements now are common on building schools. It's great for some companies that, you know, that way you end up not using probably as much local help as you normally would, and it's good for some people. But I think in the end result is it adds cost.
Mm-hmm. You also serve on one of the ag committees.
Yeah, I've been on the ag committee since I've been in Springfield, and it's a very important committee for my area. And one humorous thing that comes to mind. is when the governor was first elected, he was very popular and was floating a number of ideas on how to raise revenue. And he had one of his aides, I'm not sure what position he held in the governor's office, but anyway, they were talking about raising sales tax on farm equipment. And, of course, there are no sales tax currently, and none of the states around us have sales tax. So when we told them that, you know, if you put sales tax on farm equipment, you know, people, farmers, are just going to go to neighboring states and buy their equipment. He said that really wouldn't be a problem because when they brought it back into the state and licensed it, that they'd catch him with a sales tax there. The guy didn't even know that farm equipment isn't required to be licensed, was the point.
Okay. What do you see the important things that you've worked on in that community?
Well, there's a number of important things. Almost anything agricultural comes through that committee. The horse slaughter bill is one that was contentious. And basically, there was a plant up around Rockford that horses are taken to, slaughtered, and then the meat is shipped to foreign countries where some places it's a delicacy. Of course, it's against the law to eat horse meat here in this country. But it was a very contentious bill that and eventually we outlawed slaughtering of horses for human consumption. I don't want to eat horse meat, but if there's someone that's willing to do it, I think it brought 40 to 50 jobs up in the Rockford area. Plus, it set a baseline for an old horse. Right now, if you can't slaughter a horse, what do you do when it gets old? When it dies, it costs a lot of money to get rid of a horse if you can't sell it off.
So you opposed the bill?
I opposed the bill, but we had Bo Derrick come in, and she was right sitting in the gallery when the vote came up. And we defeated it, I think, last year or 2 years ago, and this year it passed.
Did you hear any sentiment among your constituents either way on that legislation?
Well, I mean, I live in a farm area. They realize that animals are raised and they have to be slaughtered and disposed of, so it really wasn't a big deal in my area. But I got letters from people in France and California and calls from all around the country supporting the bill to ban the slaughter of horses for human consumption. And you go to the supermarket and we slaughter sheep and cattle and horses. We don't want to slaughter them to eat, but you have to do something with them.
The particular issues that your constituents do care about for agriculture, what do they want you to?
Well, I think another thing that came up was the chipping of farm animals, so you could keep track of the movement. That was something that the federal government proposed that was very contentious and had a lot of local opposition, and eventually that was reversed where it never went into effect.
Okay, and that was the right thing to do.
Well, I think it was the right thing to do, yes.
I wanted to ask about this because agriculture is one issue that your challenger has brought up. And he claims, and I'm sorry I don't have the details in front of me, that your report card with the Illinois Farm Bureau didn't get into the favorable range until the last year or two as far as how they see voting on the issues. And I don't know if you see the Farm Bureau's particular interests being the same as the interests is, farmers and people in agribusiness in your district or not. But could you talk about?
Sure. I'm in tune. I meet with Farm Bureau in several locations, and he's correct as far as I think last year my rating wasn't as good as it had been in the past, and it came from one particular area was 80,000-pound roads The Farm Bureau was pushing that all railroads be 80,000 pounds, and I thought, well, that's good if it's followed with some money to help upgrade the roads. We have township government here in the state of Illinois, and the townships were worried that their roads weren't designed for 80,000 pounds and that it would put an undue burden on them to have to keep the roads up with the heavier trucks running on them. So I felt that they were right. I felt that if we were going to require heavier trucks, that it ought to come with some money to help do the roads. And there was no money in the bill, so I voted against it, and that hurt my farm. That was a heavily weighted issue in Farm Bureau, and so that hurt my rating.
But in other issues, you see yourself as pretty, as you and the Farm Bureau are pretty much amongst the roads.
Well, I think we have a good dialogue, and I think they respect my views. I certainly respect theirs. Sometimes we're going to disagree, and it might show up in the ratings, but I think you're going to find that there's a lot of farmers that think like I do. They don't always go along with what the Farm Bureau believes, but I think you'll find the majority of times that I'll be on the same side as the way the Farm Bureau is.
That particular issue makes me think of something we were talking about a few weeks ago in connection with your vote against the mass transit bailout bill, and that was that you and other downstate Republicans, and I think the Senate Democrats, were pushing for a capital bill and something that would fund downstate roads and other projects. And it didn't happen, but how do you see the way forward from here from working on it?
Well, basically, what we did was just fund the pensions and operations of the RTA with what we passed.
Mm-hmm. There was some money for downstate mass transit. Was it substantial enough to make a difference?
Well, I think it was $50 million maybe was for downstate. Here's the problem. They're not raising enough money operating their mass transit system just to pay for operations. So that means that the whole state, everyone in the state, is going to send money to Chicago to help them just have somebody driving the buses and driving the trains and doing things that the fare boxes should cover. If you should be able to recover most of your operational money from people riding and having that service. And that said, what's going to happen now is we're putting in millions of dollars into just the operational end, and they're going to need a huge infusion of more money for the capital end of it. They've got trains that are going to need new brakes, new wheels. They've got track repair that's got to be done. So we just put in this huge amount of money, and it's only a drop in the bucket for what really needs to be done. So that's why the downstaters felt like it didn't make much sense to pass this bill and only look at one aspect, the operational aspect, and not look at the capital end. Because, I mean, they have capital needs in Chicago. We have great capital needs downstate. I think we go over to Gibson City. There's a bridge right just west of Gibson City that is restricted to one-lane traffic because it's not safe. That's something that needs to be fixed right away. It's a hardship for the truck traffic and car traffic to get out of Gibson City on Route 9 because you got a traffic light there and you got to sit there and wait because you can only use one lane of the bridge. So there's capital needs all over this downstate that aren't being addressed. And I felt like we wanted to tie the two together to help Chicago area legislators support a capital bill so that all needs everywhere could be met, not just a portion of the needs for the RTA.
What happens now? I mean, was that, you think, the only good chance that downstate had to get this capital bill done, or could something happen, say, in 08?
Well, I think we thought that connecting the two was the best chance that we had. Whether something happens in 08, that we'll have to wait and see on, but I'm not real optimistic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That, you know, brings up, you know, the challenges you had. You're downstate, and you're in the minority party, and I would have to say that, you know, in your district, it doesn't look likely at any time in the near future that a Democrat would be representing your district. How do you make things work for the 105th in Springfield when you're facing both, you know, both the Democrats and this large Chicago area population and their lawmakers?
Well, it's frustrating. There's a lot of needs in my district. I have mayors call me up looking for help, and a lot of times I just have to tell them that the state doesn't have the money to do what they want to do, and I try to find other sources of revenue, which have been extremely difficult. So, you know, when we had Illinois First, my area was very fortunate. A lot of people, are down on George Ryan. And maybe rightfully so for some of the things that we see that he's done. But as far as Illinois First, it was very good for the 105th District. There's a lot of rural needs as far as infrastructure, water systems, fire trucks. A lot of good things happen to some small rural communities that don't have the tax base to do the things that got done.
Under the Blagojevich administration, has the area been neglected?
We haven't.
Because you didn't vote Blagojevich, or is it because you're downstate?
Well, I think you look at, take an example of what Rick Winkle was trying to do when the governor first came in. He made a deal with the governor to help the University of Illinois because the governor had cut CFAR to zero. He cut the University of Illinois budget, I think, what, 2.7? I can't remember for sure. But anyway, rather than a level budget or a small increase, he actually cut it. And Rick knew that would be devastating. He made a deal with the governor to vote for his $10 billion bond issue proposal, and what the governor turned around and reneged on his deal after Rick voted for it. So I have a library in Watseka that was supposed to get Illinois First money. They went ahead and put the addition, a children's addition, on their library, a very, very nice addition, and they never got their money. So here they are with a huge debt that they're having a hard time dealing with, and it's all because of broken promises. And if you look, there's many projects in my area that were approved through Illinois First money. The money was there. Governor Blagojevich moved the money and spent it somewhere else and didn't reneged on the promises that were made.
Do you think the scandal in the Secretary of State's office under Ryan hurt the Republicans as a whole statewide?
I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think that's the reason George Ryan didn't run for another term. He knew that he was in trouble. And I think it hurt the Republicans that Jim Ryan was an honorable man. He'd made a great governor, but he had the misfortune of having the name Ryan, and I think it hurt him a lot. So
did it go forward? I mean, like in the last election, as far as the race there. I mean, just anybody who was connected to the traditional Republican organization, did they face that same?
Well, I think Governor Blagojevich, because he had so much money in his campaign fund, he framed the way the election came about. I mean, he framed the issues. Judy Barr didn't have money early. She couldn't defend some of the ads. I mean, what is she thinking? I mean, people still remember that. So basically that election was bought because the governor had so much money to spend. And plus, he's a very charismatic person. He's likable. He's just not very good at governing.
Do you think that the tide will turn for your party, or do you think that the governor and the Democratic majority will continue to stay as formidable politically as they are right now?
Well, they're always going to be formidable in Illinois. I look at the makeup of the districts, and they were drawn to a Democratic advantage. And until redistricting comes, I don't think we have a chance at regaining the House or the Senate. And in when they're redrawn in, I think 2012, hopefully the Republicans can help redraw those and get a little favorable, more favorable districts throughout the state. And unless that happens, the only chance we have is the statewide offices.
I wanted to touch on another argument that Mr. Tomlinson made on his behalf, and that was his labor voting record. He is a union member himself with the fire department. Serves on one of the committees with the union organization there. He points to his AFL-CIO, the AFL-CIO report card as far as his voting record as being more favorable on those grounds than yours. Is that sort of thing, do you think, important to your district, or do you think your district isn't concerned with labor issues from that point of view?
Well, I think it depends on what part of the district you're talking about. I think it'd probably be more important maybe here in Champaign-Urbana than what it would be in my area. Mr. Tomlinson, as far as I know, doesn't have any record as far as voting on labor issues because he hasn't done any voting. But my record probably on labor issues, I think one of the teachers' unions said it was like 31%, and I don't. But I think if you look at most any Republican, they aren't going to be their record on labor issues is not going to be as good as any Democrat, simply because labor has always backed the Democratic Party, and Springfield right now I feel is run by labor and trial lawyers.
And you point to that split, and I know you told me that, say, I think about 28,000, so maybe a quarter of your constituents are in Champaign County. Now, I don't know if that all means the part of the Champaign-Urbana area that you serve, but is there a split between, say, perhaps people in the Champaign-Urbana and maybe the Pontiac area that you serve and the interests and concerns of the more specifically rural area?
Well, I think you get up into the Pontiac area, you've got to ask me in the prisons, and I think I've been very supportive of when the governor wanted to close Pontiac Prison. I think I stepped up and with Dan Rutherford and other area legislators and tried to do whatever we could to not let that happen. So I think I've got a good record as far as supporting them in that area. I think whenever you get a labor endorsement, I think the key is they have a lot of money. So it doesn't really matter how they play probably as far as, in different areas of the district. It's that they have the money to put out whatever they want to propose. I mean, whatever message they want to put out, they've got the money to get it out, and that's why they're formidable.
For the portion of Champaign and Savoy in that area that you serve, you know, any labor endorsements aside, what do you look at as, you know, as the work that you've done that's been important in that particular area?
Well, I think I've supported the University of Illinois in any of the any time they had a need in the budget. I was against any of the cuts. When you look at CFAR, which is a very important agriculture research, Blagojevich cut a $16 million budget, and that's money that they can leverage. You take $16 million and they leverage that, I think, into $150, $160 million. So, and he zeroed that out in his original budget proposal. You go, and let's face it, research is a multi-year investment. So when you cut it out, you're hurting the program for years to come. I think we did talk them into funding it at a much lower level, and it's I think today it's only at $5 million. So And that's very important to my area. It's very important to the economy of the state of Illinois, because when ideas that are the research brings forth it translates into new business, new jobs, new technology, and it's great for agriculture. It's great for the area. And when you cut the research like he did, it's very short-sighted.
Mm-hmm. And the governor has, and I think may have improved a little bit in recent years, but he has hit state university funding as he's looked for money to fund other areas. Can you talk about that and what downstate lawmakers can do concerning that, or how important you think it is?
Well, it's very important. I mean, just look at this area. I mean, the University of Illinois is the economic engine for this area. And when you think that Emil Jones and the governor have decided that Chicago State is more important than University of Illinois, not that they said that, but you look at how they're funding it, Illinois gets cut, Chicago State gets an increase. It's laughable, really. This is the premier university in our state and one of the premier universities in the country, and it deserves a lot more respect in state government than what it's been given.
The current leadership for the Republicans in the House, do you feel they're going in the right direction?
Well, Tom Cross, he made several changes since he's been in, and I think they're good changes. I came in, when Tom Cross became leader. I wasn't here under the old regime, but he's certainly made some reforms in our bylaws where we elect our leaders now, some of them. We also have separated our House organization, House Republican organization. We separated the money from the leader. And in the past, and this is what typical of the Democrats right now, is that they control all the campaign money. So unless you support the leader, you're not going to have any money for your reelection. And you say, well, how does that play out? And you look at Mike Farix in this past election. I think in his election against Judy Meyer, he spent around $1 million. I think 800,000 of that came from Emil Jones. So do you think he's going to have to be beholden to Emil Jones and what he wants? You know that he will. And I think that's played out in the way Jones has held up some bills in the Senate. Democrats just stood by and let him be a total dictator.
Mm-hmm. One thing that Senate Democrats in the whole seem to have stood on was voting against mass transit bailout for the same reason that you voted against it. Do you think they were just allowed to make that show of opposition by the leadership, or do you think that was actually a challenge?
Well, I don't think I really know for sure, but I know on most any vote, Emil Jones has gotten his way, and mass transit is awfully important for Chicago, and Emil Jones knows that.
Mm-hmm. Coming up in this spring session, what do you see as the important issues for your district? What's going to be your major concerns?
Well, I think for the whole state, I think trying to get the budget straightened away. I think we've passed a budget that is not workable. I think with the spending that we have in there and the money that's coming in, we're going to be short, and we're going to have to make some changes here mid-year. And projected revenue of new revenue growth is now in a downturn. I think originally for 08 they projected maybe $1.5 billion in new revenue. I think that's been readjusted now to around $800-700 million. So things are slowing down. We don't have the revenue that we thought we were going to have. We're going to have to start looking at the way we spend our money, and I think we're going to have to say, no new programs. Let's get the programs we have on solid footing. You look at our Medicaid; it's we're deadbeats. We're asking our pharmacies, we're asking our hospitals to fund state government because we don't pay them properly. We don't. First of all, we pay them slowly. I mean, 90 days, 120 days to get their money. And on top of that, the reimbursement for the services they provide is very low. So it's really a double whammy.
In a situation like that, do you think it's possible for something like a capital bill to be discussed this year? And what do you think about the proposal, which was certainly been flying around, of using the expansion of gaming to pay for a capital bill?
Well, I'm for a capital bill, but I probably can't support it in the form that it came out of the Senate. I think House Republicans had a capital bill that we proposed earlier in the year. It had some expansion of gaming. I would support. I mean, I did go on record as saying that I would support that. I don't like it, but you know, sometimes you got to do things you don't like to get things that you need. And I don't think a capital bill is going to happen. That's just my own opinion. I think we've got so many pressing problems with the current budget and next year's budget that we've got a plate full.
I know one thing that your challenger, Mr. Tomlinson, said that he saw himself as agreeing with you on were issues of pro-life issues and Second Amendment issues. And so I just wanted to touch on that and make sure where you stand in those general areas. I don't know if there's any big legislative proposals coming up in those areas, but just as a matter of course, when they do come up, I just wanted to see where you stand.
Well, I've always been a strong proponent of Second Amendment rights. I think if you know, the NRA and the Illinois Rifle Association, I think they're going to be endorsing me because of what I've done in the legislature since I've been there. I think pro-life groups will probably also support me. You know, I really, when I was younger, I didn't really have a problem with abortion till I had my own kids, and you know, you see how precious they are, and I realized that you know, I could never vote for something that would kill those little precious lives.
Thinking of measures that could conceivably come up in the legislature, for instance, parental consent bills, those be the sort of things that you would support?
Well, I know that I would want to know about any of my children, what was going on in their lives, and I think that's, you know, when state government steps in and starts doing the parents' job, I think we've gone too far. And you know, there's only so much we can do at school, and you got to rely on the parents and keep them involved. And sometimes you got bad parents, but I don't think the state can be a surrogate parent properly.
Well, I think that touches on all the issues that I had in mind. I just wanted to make sure that there were any particular areas that you wanted to bring up.
We've talked about a lot of things, and right off the top of my mind, I can't think of anything else.
Just your own background, I think you're a native of this area. That's correct.
Yes, I've lived here in Iroquois County almost all my life, been involved in agriculture all my life, and you know, it's a great area, and it's a wonderful place to raise children, and I just hope that when my kids come back from going to college, that they'll be able to find a job in the area which they grew up and be able to enjoy the rich blessings that we have.
Your hometown or home area was originally.
Onarga.
Right, Onarga.
Yeah, Iroquois County.
Do you live in the town?
I do, yeah. I live in my grandfather's house. He built it in 1924. Next door, my first cousin lives in my great-grandfather's house. And my father lives in a house that my great-grandfather built but actually built it for someone else. It was the Rissers were very wealthy merchants. They made a lot of money during the Civil War, and they built a beautiful home, and my parents acquired it about 30 years ago.
Okay. What inspired you to seek public service? First of all, was the Illinois House the first time you had run for any public office?
Well, if you count county board, I've been in county board for 14 years in Iroquois. I was the chairman of the county board, and I loved it. You know, we have a board of 25 members divided up into five districts throughout the county, five members in a district, and we tackled a lot of different issues we worked together and with the county officers and had great relationships with all of them, and it was a very, very rewarding and positive experience for me. How I got interested in politics, though, was back in 1963. Narga Military School was having their 100th anniversary, and they have a campus in the center of Narga.
Is that still running?
It's now Narga Academy, it's not the military school, but the school is, there's still a school there, but it's just the focus has shifted now. But anyway, I was riding my bicycle by, and they had a huge crowd there on campus, at least it seemed huge for a small boy. And I got off my bicycle and wandered over the podium to see what was going on. They had a couple very tall, deep-throated men there speaking. When one of them got done speaking, I had kind of pushed my way to the front of the podium. When he was done speaking, he came over and shook my hand, maybe because I was one of the younger people there or maybe the youngest. And it was Les Ahrens, who was a U.S. congressman for many years from Melvin, a very, very small town, not too far from Narga. That just kind of stuck with me all my life, and it kind of got me interested in politics, that he sought me out and thought enough to come over and talk to me.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned your work on the Iroquois County Board, and this being a body where people seem to be working together. And I gather it may not always seem that way in the General Assembly. What's it been like these past few years working there?
It was culture shock. I thought I was prepared to go down there and do the work of the people, but I have to admit, it took me a while to realize. I mean, it didn't take me long to realize things were different. It just took me a long time to adjust. It is so partisan there. I think in Iroquois County, it didn't matter where the idea came from. If it was a good idea, we took it and ran with it. In Springfield, it matters a great deal. And if the Republicans come up with a good idea, a lot of times it will be stolen and it'll show up from on the other side, or else it won't be advanced at all. And that's disappointing that we can't get along better. I think with a different governor, I think things will improve a lot.
Mm-hmm. Have you been able to, as far as getting your sea legs in the General Assembly, being able to have some constructive effect, you think, for your district?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about it. I've stood up for the values that our district represents, and that has been very rewarding. And I think probably the most rewarding thing about this job, and really no one thinks about it, and that is constituent services. You know, I have an office in Savoy, and I have one in Narga, and we handle a lot of calls every day with people needing help, and that's the most rewarding portion of this job is helping people one person at a time with problems that they have with state government. Even sometimes it doesn't have to be state government. It can be with electric, with the gas company. It's just you'd be surprised the different calls that we get of people needing help. And sometimes we can't help them, but one thing that I will say that if anyone calls, we will certainly try to help.
Do you think constituent services is a big contributor to how people make their decisions about voting for a legislator?
I think it we'll see. You know, we'll see. I think we've tried to do whatever we could to help people. I think a lot of those people that we help maybe don't vote. It is my guess, but a lot of them probably do. I think it'll make a difference. And if it doesn't, it doesn't matter. It's made a difference in my life being able to help them, whether they vote for me or they don't vote. I'm a better person because I was able to help.
Representative Coulter, thank you very much for talking with me.
It's been a pleasure. Thank